Well, Raymond, our legend of the game today is a man whose name has now become synonymous with certain acts, not only in the sporting field, but elsewhere as well. And the incredible thing about it is that it was that sort of will to win and the desire to continue that saw him become an Olympic gold medalist. I'm talking about Stephen Bradbury, who's good enough to join us on the line. G'day, Stephen.
Yeah, g'day, guys. It sounds like you've referred to the saying that makes me very proud these days, doing a Bradbury, which
and you should be,
to
Steve.
The Macquarie Dictionary in 2014.
Another accomplishment, Steve.
Fantastic. Hey, mate, we ask it of our legends of the game. How did speed skating become part of your life?
Yeah, well, it's certainly not the most Australian pastime.
No, that's right.
That you could come across, but my dad was the national champion in the sport a couple of times back in the 60s, and for him it was probably more of a regular hobby. It wasn't a world championship or Olympic sport back then, but it was what our family did, and I got introduced to it as a young age and developed a passion for it and decided to see how good I could be at it.
And Steve, to be fair, at the time Winter Olympics wasn't, I guess, high on the sporting radar in Australia, so funding would have been, I dare say, a massive issue for you.
Oh, you should have seen the sponsors lining up.
Zero, I'm tipping you.
Yeah, speed skater from Brisbane.
but seriously, Steve, how does a young person like yourself who wants to pursue his passion, who wants to do the best he can, how do you compete on the world stage when you've basically got no financial backing?
Yeah, well, you know, I was lucky enough back in my day to have some support from the likes of the Queensland Academy of Sport and the Olympic Gurra Institute, which was in its early stages at that point in time. But I was doing it on a shoestring like our Olympic athletes still are in 2019.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of where we're falling behind a lot of other countries in the world. Athletes are actually being paid a salary aside from having all their expenses covered these days, whereas in Australia, where we're only still covering the expenses. So we're slowly but surely falling down the medal tally, you know. And for me, in my day, I was still able to compete because you didn't really have to have every single 1%er covered because it wasn't as specialised as what it is now. And, you know, if we're going to specialise and continue to win gold medals at the Olympics, then it needs to be backed with funding.
Makes a lot of sense. What about, so your Olympic journey started in 1994 at Lillehammer, and you actually won a bronze medal there. What impact did that have on you and help you continue with your pursuit of the sport? Because it's clear that that's a very important part of the story as well.
Oh, it certainly is. And, you know, for me, the bronze medal was Australia's first Winter Olympics medal.
Yep.
Which I was able to win in the relay with my teammates, Richard Dzielski, Kieran Hansen, and Andrew Murtha. And you know, our goal was to do exactly that, was to win Australia's first winter medal. And some notoriety came on the back of that. You know, we're in the newspapers for a couple of weeks, but unfortunately it was all forgotten quite quickly. But for me, I was the youngest member of the team back then and was arguably the favourite to win the gold medal at that Olympics in the 1,000-metre event. And I was actually knocked down in the first round of the Olympic competition. The guy who took me out got disqualified, and I was left sitting there in the ice thinking, well, this is bullshit. And fortunately was able to put some of those disappointments to rest by backing up in the relay and getting the bronze.
Exactly, yeah. That was 1994, which was obviously a fantastic moment in your career, Steve, but also that was the year when you had a horrific injury in an incident in a World Cup event in Montreal when your right thigh was slashed by another speed skater. Can you take us through that moment, Steve?
I can, yes. A slash is probably an understatement. Yeah. I think impaled is more appropriate. Oh. It went clean through my right leg and other guy's blade, and a person of my size has 5.5 litres of blood, and I lost 4 of them in a minute. And it's kind of amazing how much power that a human can find inside themselves when you're put into a life and death situation like that. And, you know, for me, I can remember every second and I could feel my eyes closing and my body going into shock, and I thought, well, if I lose consciousness here, I'm going to die. And I just made a pact with myself at that moment that that wasn't going to happen, and I got a lot of unfinished business to take care of in this life. And I was able to try and use that sort of power as a positive when I came back into the sport. If I was having a tough day in training, I tried to compare it to when I was lying on the ice in Montreal and wasn't so tough anymore.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. All right, let's fast forward to 2002, Salt Lake City. Am I right in saying, and this is what I have read previously, so take it with a grain of salt, you were actually going there as a skate maker and had wanted to give, was it Apollo Anton Ono, a pair of skates, and this is one of the guys you end up beating in the gold medal race to take that gold medal. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, Apollo was on our skates, Revolutionary Boot Company, we were called back then, RBC, and ironically, we actually had 20% of the Olympic field wearing our products.
Yeah, wow. Right. Yeah.
And we were selling speed skating boots all around the world. And Apollo was one of our highest profile athlete wearing our boots at that point. And I sent him an email the night before the race. I said, if you happen to win, Apollo, can you try and give RBC a bit of a message in the media?
That's interesting. Steve, can I ask you about your mindset? Then obviously Apollo was the pin-up guy and the hot favourite. You've made the final. What was your game plan? What were your tactics in that final? And Steve, did you think you could medal?
Well, I'd been to 3 Olympics prior to Salt Lake City, and I had realistic chances to win, if not being favourite in some of those. And it hadn't happened aside from the bronze in the relay, which was a fantastic moment for myself and my teammates. But in the individual events, I hadn't achieved what I wanted to and hadn't done my best at the Olympics. And when I went to the fourth one, the goal was to go there and skate my best. And it wasn't about where I finished anymore. And I was able to achieve that in that Olympics in the quarterfinals, where I beat a skater from Canada by the name of Marc Gagnon. He'd been 4-time world champion. I hadn't beaten that prick for 8 years.
And you got him, you beauty.
But I got him in the quarterfinals in Salt Lake City. And for me, that was job done. And in the semi-finals, I had 3 skaters fall over in front of me, and I skated pretty well in the semis, but I had some luck to get into the final, and I knew that I wasn't as strong as the other skaters, and I looked at the other names before the final, and I thought to myself, I don't think I could beat any of them. Mm. And I had a chat with my coach, little Chinese lady, her name's Ian Zhang. And she agreed with me.
Oh, really? So what do you do then, Steve?
Yeah, so, we decided somewhat through experience and judgment that getting mixed up with the other 4 skaters at all in the early stages of the race was pointless. And everybody wanted to win so badly, nobody else was skating for silver or bronze.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted gold.
Yeah.
And we thought, well, there's a window there. If other people make mistakes, there's a very high chance that I'll pick up a bronze medal. Happy days.
Because that happened in the semi, didn't it, Steve?
Yeah.
Just to go back, there was an incident in the semi which you took advantage of as well.
There was, and I was skating with the same tactic in the semi, but 4 races in an hour and a half in speed skating. Heats, quarters, semi-final with only a very short rest in between. Being the oldest skater in the Olympic field at my 4th Olympics, I didn't quite have the lactic acid tolerance to back up 4 times in an hour and a half anymore, and I knew it.
Yeah.
Bring me back the next day, different story, different race tactic altogether.
I understand,
That's not how the sport works. And, if I could have walked away with a bronze medal before that final, if you had given me the bronze before the final, I would have snapped it up and said, beautiful, finished, job done, 4 Olympics, I'm retiring.
Yeah.
And to imagine better than that was completely unrealistic, but I had a strategy that was different to everybody else, and as it turned out, on that moment, on that particular day, it was good enough for the gold. Mm.
Well, you're able to promote your skates. Because
you do it
yourself. You're the gold medalist now.
The media conference was interesting. I was crapping myself. I didn't even know if I wanted to go to the medal ceremony or the media conference, because I would much rather have won you know, when I was the best in the world 8 years earlier.
But yeah,
that's not how it turned out. And yeah, sitting in the change room after the event, the place was going nuts. People lining up to pat me on the back, some of them I hadn't seen for 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm pretending I'm enjoying it, but in my head, I'm not really there. In my head, I'm already off into the media conference because I'm trying to think of how I'm going to answer the questions they're going to ask me. And I'm through the first one. That's how'd you feel when you cross the line? That's pretty easy. Second one is going to be, well, Steve, the whole world is about to ask you if you think you deserve to win or not. And there's even a television crew out there from Pakistan at the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
And, I decided that I'd take the gold not for the 90 seconds of that race, but for the 14 years of hard work in the lead-up.
Absolutely. Yeah, great. Yeah. Cool.
And to go back to your question, the questions about RBC, the boot company, flowed on constantly through the media conference, so that was pretty good.
Exactly. You mentioned 14 years, and that's not often spoken about, is it, Steve? People look at that moment when there was that fall on the final bend and you skated through to win the goal, but no one really goes back and talks to you about the 14 years of sacrifice that you had to do to get to that point of your career.
Yeah, well, you know, this interview's going for a while now, and we're almost getting into the point of background, which doesn't usually happen in media. They only focus on the result, you know. And for me, you know, in short, I trained 5 hours a day, 6 days a week for 14 years to become an overnight success.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Extraordinary. Yeah. And that's what's not often spoken about, is it?
Steve, in the quiet moments since, in the time when you get a chance to reflect, do you know why on that day, in that particular way, that you became an Olympic champion? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, you're going deep on me now.
Yeah, I want to hear it, Steve.
Yeah, well, I have reflected, and if you had asked me before that Olympics if I believed in karma,
yeah,
I would have said no. Afterwards, I'm not so sure because, you know, I think whilst I raced hard and, you know, I took no prisoners out there on the ice, I think I treated people fairly through my life and
yes,
I helped people where I could, and just maybe I built up a whole lot of karma points over the years and I cashed them all in at once.
What a great mindset.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Hey, Steve, this might be easy but also difficult if that makes any sense to answer, but how did that gold medal change your life?
Well, it changed it in every way. Mm. I mean, I finally started to make a few dollars from the sport the day that I retired. Which,
funny how it works,
yeah.
Which to me kind of felt like it was a bit backwards. So that was nice. And everyone wanted to know my story. You know, I was a speed skater from Brisbane training away in the black box, back blocks in Acacia Ridge for nearly 20 years and no one wanted to know. And then the day that I retired, everybody wanted to know. So I was happy to start talking about my story as well. And you know, that kind of led me into going on stages at conferences and corporate dinners and sportsmen's lunches at schools and all that sort of thing. And,
yeah,
you know, I've become a bit of an expert at that these days. You know, I'd like to say that I'm still an expert at racing at the Olympics and seeing where I finish, but I'm past it. And that sort of adrenaline, I just don't get in my life anymore. But where I do get the adrenaline, which for a person like me I need, is on stage. And, you know, I've spoken at over 1,350 events in 21 countries these days.
Hey.
And, you know, I work with a professional speechwriter and a comedian to hone my craft. If anyone wants to know any more, they can check it out at stephenbradbury.com.
Yeah, motivational speaker. And Steve, I understand there could be, or there is a movie in the pipeline, Last Man Standing is its name, I think. And hopefully that will portray those years of sacrifice and put all this into context.
Hopefully, yeah. I'm pretty excited about that project. It's been an off again, on again, off again for over a decade. And Last Man Standing was the title that the producers were rolling with originally, but now it's simply going to be called Bradbury.
Fair enough, yeah.
And, I'm hoping that when the movie comes to the big screen in a couple of years' time, that it's a movie where parents can take their kids, and it's all positive. You know, there's so much negativity in the world these days, and I think it needs to be a story where you can take your kids along, and you, at the end of it, you can go, you see what you're doing. If you're prepared to give it everything you've got, then you put yourself in position to have something good happen down the track.
Yeah. Well, they say good things happen to good people, yeah. Steve, and I think you've just explained to our listeners exactly how that has occurred for you, mate. It's a fantastic story, and it's great to dig a little deeper because we know that there is always more depth to those stories. Been fantastic having you on the program today, and thanks for
legend,
being our legend of the game.
Yeah, cheers, guys. And I feel like the good person thing's right, but it didn't quite feel like that on Survivor recently. that's brutal, that game.
Yeah. there's karma coming their way, Steve.
Yeah, we were going to ask you about that. Yeah. You had your strategy all out and everything, didn't you?
I did, and it played out perfectly for about 5 minutes. and then some people rolled on it that didn't have enough discipline, and I got hung out to dry. But, that's a different playing field. That show, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, most definitely.
Steve, it's been great talking to you. I really appreciate it, mate, for our true legend of the game, Stephen Bradbury. Thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah, cheers, guys. And look out for Last Man Standing Aussie Lager, hopefully coming to a pub near you soon.
There you go.
Okay. No doubt about it. You're a commercial animal.
Good on you, Steve. Thanks so much, mate.
See you guys.